Hi, this is Henry Ryan, and with me is Steve Elzinga. We're the professors in this class on influence. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about more of these influence-wrecking habits. And we have started with not walking with God is a serious breach of a person who wants to make an influence in this world. Why do we keep talking about that?
It's an obvious thing. Remember when we first started together?
I know what you're going to say. We've got pregnant.
Well, we started and we got all excited about everyone needs their own walk with God, and we thought.
Simple.
We thought we had just invented plastic.
Yeah.
And we thought we just have to tell the churches we got to get back to our walk with God and all revival would happen. Right. And then when we started doing it, people just didn't do it.
Right.
They got excited when we told them, that a relationship with God.
Someone's tears. Oh,
yeah.
Just fine.
But a week later, they didn't do it.
Yeah.
It was like, what? So getting habits of actually walking with God when you don't have it is a hard thing, apparently.
Yeah.
And
if you can lead yourself.
Yeah.
Or your spouse or your family to that.
Yes.
That'll and face the walls
that
it would take for the 15-year-old who's do we have to do this? And if you can figure out how to influence yourself and your family in these habits, that becomes powerful in the principles and desire and will to influence others.
Right. I think too, Christians are just used to blowing this one off. We've all had a walk with God, and we were doing our devotions, and we did it for a while, and then we stopped doing it, and we don't think anything of it.
Right.
And then a year later, we get, I guess I should get back to that.
Right.
Like it's some small thing.
Right.
Like, I should get back to actually talking to I haven't talked to her in a year. I guess I should get, that's a serious problem.
If you're married, and you actually do not have habits of talking, that is serious.
It's like, okay. So we tend to diss this one, and maybe some of you have been watching, you've been hearing us talk about this, but you still don't have a walk with God. You don't have a daily walk with God. You have a rather hit or miss walk with God because you haven't done it.
You pray every once in a while.
So you hear it, and you just go, yeah, and then you still don't do it.
Yeah.
So we don't want that to happen to you.
Okay, with that, we move on to not having a loving heart.
Okay.
Proverbs 15, verse 17. Better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred. It's interesting reading up on this is there are several things. Like one of the principles that you have in the positive in the literature on influence is being likable. But another one is actually being loving. I mean, just being a wonderful, caring person.
Right.
You can have, in fact, some of the stuff talks this way. You can have all kinds of the things. You can be smart. You can manage money well. You can know how to, the techniques of making friends. All of these things. But if someone believes and looks into your eyes and does not see love, you will not be that influential.
Right. You're trying to influence someone, but if they get the sense that you don't care about them, then
it's over.
The people don't listen. They don't care about what you want or your goals and all those things until they know you care about them. So, leading a church, it's not just having all the right answers and the right direction and the right vision. If people don't have a sense that you care about them, it doesn't matter all your preaching and your teaching and your music and all those things. They got to know that you care.
Right. I mean, let me ask you, do you care? Why are you in ministry?
I feel guilty already, Henry.
But I think guilt is given by God on some level.
Because I look at it, because I'm an idea person and I'm all that.
Right.
If anything, I'm short on the caring part. And I always think, that's for other people to do, right?
Right.
But I think it hurts my influence. That when I can combine the vision and all the things that I feel like I'm good at with I actually care about you.
Right.
That's when it goes well.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Next one, cheating. Proverbs 1 verse 19. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away from the lives of those who get it. Now, cheating is a lot of things. You know, I know that on our golf course, if you are a person who cheats, and I have sort of the theory is like, you know, no one's unrealistic that in one given year, a person every once in a while may cheat once in a while. I mean, just, mm-hmm. I mean, humans are humans.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, anyone at the country club that I'm at, if it's cheating is any habitual aspect, they could go down in stature like in a hurry. If cheating is in any way, I mean, one time is bad enough, but if somebody two, right. three, four times.
So what other examples of cheating? Like, I guess, you know, we have students that sometimes cheat.
We do.
Christian Leaders Institute.
We do.
You know, they'll copy things from, you know, on, you can look, you know, today you can cheat so easily.
Right.
You can just look up somebody else's paper and just copy it and send it. And
yes.
So now I think schools are starting to have algorithms where they can check. To
we have algorithms.
Yeah, where you can, you know, where there's someone found that on the internet somewhere or.
Right.
And it's, you know, I guess cheating is, again, it focuses on you. You're trying to look better than you are.
Yes.
Instead of just admitting, you know, I blew it or something.
Right.
You know, I didn't do it very well. So we want to appear better than we are.
Right.
But then again, our focus is on ourselves.
Right.
And we're not thinking about how we can help someone else.
Do you feel like if someone has a bad reputation in cheating that they can repair that?
Yeah, but it will take work, and you probably would need a coach because cheating becomes a habit.
Right.
You know, it starts off with, I'm just going to do this for now because I didn't have time to study, so I'm going to write a few answers on my notebook.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll take the test and I'll do those. But then that works so well that, you know,
time runs out little by little.
You're right. Starting to cheat more and more about your cutting corners everywhere, and you didn't intend to do that. You started in a pickle. You know, I'm just going to lie this one time about this thing, and because right now I'm under stress. There's always a good reason.
Right.
But then it worked, so now we start relying on all these ways that we, you know, basically cheat. We're cutting a corner. And it works, and then we have to cut more corners, and we have to defend our lives, and then eventually it catches up with you. Just like embezzling. Some people embezzle from their company. They take money that's not theirs, and they don't do it like, you know, I'm going to steal this money. Probably most do it, you know, I'm going to take this money for now, but I'm going to put it back next week, and I just have this need. And then they do, but next week they don't put it back. And then they take it again, they take it again. Next thing you know, they get caught for stealing. And it just catches up with you.
Staying too long. Proverbs 10, verse 19. When words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. Why is this an issue of influence? And when I read some of the aspects and blogs about how the appropriate time at meetings, in hospitality, the appropriate time of staying, when you hold a meeting, the appropriate time to disband the meeting, to make sure the meetings are the appropriate length and end them when you should end them. And people hurt their influence when they don't honor this principle. Why is that, Steve?
Well, I think, you know, like a lot of times it happens in the church when you're having a Bible study. Okay, we're going to have a Bible study. It's an hour and a half. We meet from 7 till 8:30. Okay, so you have the Bible study, and 8:30 rolls around, and you're having this incredible, great discussion.
Oh, yeah.
So you let it roll.
I've been there. I know exactly what he's talking about.
So you let it roll, everyone enjoyed every minute of it, and it went till 9.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone enjoyed it. It was awesome.
Right.
You know, next week, the person is thinking about coming to your Bible study again. And he goes, last time it went till 9. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I don't want to do that again this week.
Right.
And so even when you stay too long and it goes well, the next time someone is more or less reluctant to do it all because he doesn't want to. You said an hour and a half, and it went two. And it was fine that time, but I don't want to do that this time. So
right.
I don't trust you, and I don't want to invest in it because I don't know what it's really going to be. So I think
right.
it comes down to that you know, I don't. People don't like to be trapped into some situation, you know. You know, when you invite someone over to your house and they stay forever,
right.
how do you kick them out?
Right.
You want to go to bed. And now you're less likely to invite someone the next time because...
Right.
So I think the mistake sometimes is you stay too long, even when it's good. Sometimes you just need to stick with what you said.
Right.
So people can count
it's
on
it. It's almost like leave it at good.
Yeah, leave it at good.
And don't stay so long that then all of a sudden it's like...
Well, and a lot of people when they leave, you know, they take like forever to say goodbye, right? They stand
right.
up and they talk and they're, okay, we got to go. And
right.
then they say a couple more things and then they go to the door finally and then they stop and now there's another story. And it's like it's a half an hour process of someone leaving.
Or getting off the phone.
Yeah,
it's like, just,
yeah.
you know, the staying too long to be, you know, staying too long on the phone call.
Yeah.
And
people are gracious enough that they're friendly
yeah.
and they're talking to you, so you get the impression that they're enjoying every minute of it. But half the time, a person is going, I got to get going here. I got things to do.
Right.
So again, it's being aware of people and your setting and your situation.
You know, and I think to a lot of ministers, we can fall into this because we're thinking valuable ministry is
yes,
being done
right.
if we stay a little longer and we talk a little bit
yeah.
more.
You know, my first elder, my first church, Johnny Venema, he had the art of stopping in and encouraging and leading down like no one I've ever met.
Really?
Yeah, he would come. And he'd come to the door, and you'd say, oh, Johnny, come on in. No, I have only a second. I just wanted to say that I really appreciated this or that or whatever. I know when they were thinking of calling me, he drove down an hour and a half. We were staying at my grandfather's house. An hour and a half, he comes to the door. Come on in. No, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, the church is really excited if you come. And he just said... like 5 minutes of stuff he wanted to say, and I kept saying, no, you got to come in. No, I just wanted to, I mean, he drove an hour and a half for 5 minutes, but he was good at that. And you felt encouraged. He got his business done and then left.
Right.
It was so good.
Wow. I suppose you could make an argument that there should be a plan in your mind of how long...
Yes.
And before you
right.
arrive.
And stick with it.
Like, or even on a phone call. You know,
yeah.
Like today I had a phone call with an attorney as we're helping with the immigration issue with somebody in the staff. And it was really fascinating. The meeting was 1 hour. It was long, and I learned more about immigration than I ever learned in that 1 hour. But it was really fascinating. At 5 to the hour, wow, this is really good. You know, I got like another 15 minutes, a half hour. You know, we can talk a little longer. But I said, you know what? Our meeting was to be done, and I just appreciate your time.
Right.
Good, great, oh, excellent. And I felt when
yeah.
we hung up, like,
yeah.
you know, even though I was given permission and we were in a good conversation,
right.
And there were terms, you know, because this was a paid consulting thing.
Right.
And I know he was going to give some, quote, extra time.
Right, right.
I just felt like, you know, the meeting is over,
right.
and let's just
right.
honor that.
Right.
Even though I had a few more questions.
Right.
So being aware of how long you stay.
Right. Or how much you talk, or, you know, it's the same kind of issue, telling a huge, long story. And
right. It's kind of
you just told three stories before that.
Right.
You got to catch the eyes rolling, you know,
yeah,
people
yeah.
going, uh-oh, here comes a long story.
Well, we talked before about passive-aggressive. This is aggressive. Insulting someone else, Proverbs 12, verse
yeah.
14, from the fruit of his lips, a man is filled with good things.
Yeah, I think people do this when they feel insulted. Right?
Okay.
You say something negative about me, and now I want to say something to you. You know, hey, how come you're late? What do you mean I'm late? You're the one that's usually late. You know,
right.
Now I whatever you say to me, it poked me, and now I'm going to poke you back on something that's related or not related. You know, I might be trying to change the subject. So it's, insulting someone usually is a defensive reaction. And again, you're consumed with yourself and not the other person. Why not, really when someone insults you and says some negative thing to you, and you're like, I don't even get why they're saying that. That just doesn't make any sense. That's a good indication that you should listen to them.
Right.
Because you don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you say that? Why would you say that to me?
Right.
You know, you're always that.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would like to know more about why you think that.
Right.
Because if I just insult you back, I still don't know why you said that.
Right.
I can't clear it up. I can't change your mind. I can't understand you more, or what I'm doing that pushes your buttons.
Right.
I learned nothing. And a lot of husbands and wives do that. They insult each other back and forth, back and forth, and back and forth. And I just don't understand that woman.
Right.
I just don't understand that guy that I married. Well,
right.
Yeah. Because all you're doing is exchanging insults and not talking and not, okay, so why are you saying that? I want to understand why you're saying these things. So really, anytime you get insulted, it's a great opportunity to learn something.
Right. A lot of the literature, Steve, talks about back to social media, back to the blogging side.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can utilize these things and become like an impersonal insulter.
Right.
Or they can diss the ministry online in a passive-aggressive way, or it does really hurt your influence.
Right. Well, and it's so easy with, online. You can easily, in a second, I'm not facing you, and I can just say, that's stupid. You can insult someone so easily because it's just a couple strokes, whereas if you're sitting here, I'm going to insult you, and I'm going to get something back. And, here is so impersonal. So I think that's a problem in social media. People are insulting each other back and forth, and no one's listening, no one's understanding, no one.
Right.
And it's a horrible forum for that, because for me to understand you might take a half an hour of listening, and you're not going to type out a half an hour's worth of stuff in social media.
Right. I know the Bible has stories of it doesn't go well for the people who insult or mock. You know, the story of, I don't know if it's Elisha with those kids mocking.
Right.
Insulting. Yeah, Elisha. And then even you see so many stories in the New Testament about insulters and mockers and just how it really takes away from ministry and,
Yep.
Frowning or an anxious heart. Now, again, we talk about smiling, not smiling. Can someone smile and still have a frowning or anxious heart?
Right. It's
Proverbs 12, verse 25, an anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up.
Right. So I think frowning is just the external sign of the internal stuff that's going inside of you.
So this is a deeper one.
Like
if you have a frowning spirit, almost.
Your anxious heart is.
It weighs you down, weighs everyone else down.
It weighs everyone down. And a lot of pastors are this way with their preaching. Like the church, if the pastor is up and feeling good about his faith and what's going on, then his messages are up and we're all up. But when he's down, he's discouraged.
When he's
and,
down,
like, and then all the messages are, oh, life is hard. Where is God? And, they're all kind of have this negative thing.
Right.
And your anxiousness is bringing everyone else's down. Everyone else down. But what I like about this proverb is it only takes a kind word to cheer someone up.
Right.
So that's influence.
Right.
If it takes a smile, instead of, you know, frowning can take them down, well, then what can a smile do?
Right.
And it can, you know, like at a church, if people are, the leaders are, hey, how you doing, Bob?
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
got a smile and they're
right.
positive. People can't help but feel that.
Right.
Respond to that. And one little kind word. I mean, just...
Right.
People get so few kind words or encouraging words that if you say anything, it's like...
Influential.
Yeah. I still remember my fifth grade teacher. It was paper mache time. You know, you dip paper in wet flour and,
right.
and then it becomes sticky and it gets right. hard. Well, everyone was making pigs. You know, you take a balloon and you wrap the paper around it, you put
yeah.
a snout on it and a little tail. You got a pig.
I remember those.
Yeah. So I was sitting there and I had a penny in my pocket. And I like this. Here's a penny. Happens to be a penny here. And I took this penny out. And whose face do you see on this?
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. So I put this penny down. And I got the stuff, and I started forming, and I put the beard on, and I made a Abraham Lincoln head.
Oh, okay.
Then I made the body, or he had a big long... I had an Abraham Lincoln about this big.
Wow.
Okay, everyone else is
making... I have never heard this story. We have been friends for over 3 decades, and I have not heard this story.
I think there's one picture that has survived in our family that has...
This is the story. Okay.
Yeah.
This is my first timer for me, everybody.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, so I made this Abraham Lincoln thing, and I'm making the coat and what have you. And the teacher walked by, my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Friends. And she came by, and she looked at my Abraham Lincoln. Then she looked at me, and she said, "You're very creative." And then she walked away.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if I was creative before that, but certainly after that, it's how I thought about myself the rest of my life. From that, those one sentence, "You're very creative." When I went to college, that's what I looked for on all my papers. Whenever I wrote anything, I was looking for, this is interesting. This is,
right.
that's all I cared about.
Right.
Because I am creative.
One
sentence, one word of encouragement, and it changed my life. So, you know, one frown can change a person's life.
Right.
You know, putting all your negativity on someone else can change their life too.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Very good. Not caring about the quality of your work, Proverbs 12, verse 10 and 11, a righteous man cares for the needs of his animals. He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. You know, I know that we have students, Steve, who do their profiles, and you know, we mention, you know, we proofread or get someone. And I remember me young in ministry being dyslexic. You know, I'm just doing the best I can. You know, and there was this minister in Colorado, and I had written, this is early first 10 years of the ministry or something, and I had written an email, and this minister wrote me. Long, perfectly proofread. Yeah, I don't even say that right now. Proofread rebuke, and I remember, you know, like my first reaction was just feeling like negative and defensive. And,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I'm just doing my best. What are you doing? You right. know, all this right. other stuff like that. And so I read that, and I realized that I was using my dyslexia as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, it took me years, but one of the first things as I did is I really got a team around me to help me, like my wife, who God just happened to give me an incredible
right.
wife who loves to proofread and works with dyslexic husband, me. But I bring this story because it was the quality of the work. If you're in ministry, if you're writing a profile, have someone proofread it. We're not, you know, perfection probably can never be attained.
Mm-hmm.
But just sort of saying, you know, it's good enough, I'm moving on, without really attempting even something small like that.
Right.
What about the rest of your ministry?
Right.
Do you not care that the rest of your ministry is done well? What if a floor layer, you know, put out the tile down, and then, you know, part of it goes, you know what, I'm going to change the grout, I don't have a crooked, and in a lot of ways, the quality of our work matters for our influence.
Yeah. I remember I was on a softball team, and we had a coach, and he was a college guy. He was into baseball at the college, and then he came to, I was in grade 9, I think, and he was going to be our coach, and he did everything by the book. I mean, practices were, you know, you have to hit the cutoff man, this is how you hit a slide.
Right.
Practices were like a game.
Right.
And we all loved it.
Right.
We loved that he was a discipline. Every minute was accounted for, everything that you're doing. It was just goofing around. This is important. We loved practice itself. Right. So I think it's this, you know, because he cared about this thing. He cared about us learning and growing. Right. So I think a person that, you know, has this sense that, you know, I care about my work, I want it to be the best it can be, that's, you make it fun for the people that are with you.
Right.
And they want to follow you and be around you.
Now, how does it work in the comparison of perfectionism and quality of work? Because in some ways, there's only 24 hours in a day. And I've also seen people who go the other end that they can't even get anything done because they're stymied in so much quality that they can't get even one thing done.
Well, and it's the way to balance it is a thing called ROI, return on investment.
Okay.
You could take forever to paint your house, but your return on investment would be, you know you're making $2 an hour or something because you're taking too long. And the extra quality that you get isn't worth twice as many hours.
Right.
So it's the same in church. If you're spending all your time doing, you know, making one thing perfect, you just let five things fall apart.
Yeah.
And now that's going to hurt your church more than that one thing being perfect.
Right.
In some ways, a lot of life is triage.
Right.
You have only so much time, and you do the best that you can. Quality as best you can with the time that you have.
Right.
So if you spend all your time writing a sermon, then you're not visiting anyone, you're not encouraging anyone, you're not discipling anyone, you're not doing outreach.
Right.
But it's a really, really good sermon.
Right.
Well, make it a 90% sermon and do all those other things.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, I know that we have that at Christian Heirs Institute. In some ways, it'd be great to have this every single class produced with a good size budget, but the reality is we optimize, meaning that we take digital content out so you can see them on cell phones in Africa.
Right.
You know, there's so many issues. Yes, we could be a lot better, but we're a triage. In some ways, it's good to have 95 classes right now in 2019 in the summer than to have like 8 classes that are done
really well.
That's so well that it's you can't almost make any impact.
Right.
So what you're saying, always the context determinants, but always give your best.
Right. Whatever it is, and your best might be within a limited time frame.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's the best you could possibly do, but it's the best you could do with the time that you had.
Right. Right. Interesting. Well, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to the next session.